Housekeeping items before we start, and Enid Joy from the FT will be moderating our discussion today from the candidates. The housekeeping items are, as usual, if I could remind you all to turn off your cell phones, and in this case, we also, although everyone will, I understand, is going to be speaking in English today, we do have simultaneous translation available, if anyone would like that. I think there's some sets available for that. And also, quickly before we start, just to mention that this is the beginning of a busy week for us. Tomorrow we have a panel discussion, that's one of our evening events, on self-censorship in the press in Hong Kong. That will include Albert Cheng, Claudia Mo, Mak Ying-ting from the Hong Kong Journalists Association, former South China Morning Post journalist Paul Mooney, and Alan Cheng from the Institutional Investor magazine. And on the 27th, sorry, on the 6th of September, we have Professor Michael DeGolyer, also ahead of the elections, talking about whether the issues of how heavily the issues of corruption and national education are impinging on the minds of the Hong Kong voter. Just very quickly, we're honored today to have with us some of the candidates. Just here, Starry Lee from the Democratic Alliance for the Betterment Progress Hong Kong. Pamela Peck, an independent candidate. Frederick Fung from the Hong Kong Association for Democracy and People's Livelihood. And James Toh from the Democratic Party. We also did invite representatives of the other slates for the functional constituencies, but Chan Yuan Han, Lau Kong Wah, and Albert Ho weren't able to attend. Without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Enid, who will moderate the session. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Douglas. Hi, everyone. This is Enid Choi, the FT's Hong Kong correspondent. Thank you very much to our four speakers today to take time in an extremely busy week to come and speak to our members. Now, our speakers today are among the 287 candidates running for 70 seats in Hong Kong's Legislative Council this coming Sunday. Unlike the majority of the candidates, these four are going to battle it out in a newly created category, the District Council Functional Constituency, where five seats will be decided by roughly 93% of Hong Kong's 3.5 million registered voters who do not qualify to vote in the traditional functional constituencies. So I know that there will be a lot of questions that you would all like to ask the candidates about their platforms and their views on controversial issues, but first, I'd like to ask each one to spend about 5 minutes to talk about why they've chosen to run in this new category and their long-term visions with regards to Hong Kong's political reform. So why don't we start with Starry Lee and sort of move this way. So Starry, your 5 minutes will start now.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Thank you for FCC's invitation. It's my pleasure to speak to all of you, to share a bit of myself. By way of introduction, my name is Starry Lee. Some of you may have seen me on the TV recently because we are running for a very big and new campaign. I'm a CPA, a certified public accountant by profession. I'm married and has a 10-year-old daughter. At 25, I was elected as a district councillor. At that time, I was the youngest female district councillor. I continued to serve in this capacity for more than 12 years. In 2008, I was elected and become a member of the Legislative Council representing the Kowloon West geographical constituency. Kowloon West, that means Kowloon City, Sam Shui Po, and also Yau Chin Mong. And we all understand that the new term of the Legislative Council is very important for the Hong Kong future. because we will go through the final stage of Hong Kong democratization process and have to prepare ourselves for the universal suffrage. We are faced with challenges in three major areas. First, we must build a consensus and decide on the method for electing the chief executive and the whole legislative council by universal suffrage. Second, in view of the volatile and unpredictable global economic situation, we must strengthen our economic structure and seek new momentum for sustained growth. Third, we must address our deep-rooted social conflicts. We must invigilate upward mobility and narrow the wealth gap so that grassroots families can share the fruit of the economic growth. To meet these challenges, we have to address a series of problems, some of which can be very controversial, and these include, we all know that, right? How to decide the method for electing the chief executive in 2017 and the legislative council in 2016 and 2020, and what supporting policy should be introduced. What policy should be implemented to save energy and reduce carbon emission? All of you do care this part, right? And waste production, and enable more effective waste management and encourage a green economy. And we have, and also, what should industrial diversification be encouraged by specific government policy, including setting up a government investment corporation to invest in strategically chosen industry, which I understand a lot of countries do have this kind of experience, but we still do not reach consensus in this part. And all in all, a lot of controversial issues have to be dealt with in this LegCo and for the coming few years. We have to find proper solution to all this problem in order to develop good democracy and maintain our social stability and economic prosperity. Yet any solution will inevitably be controversial, for various conflicts are involved in each of these problems. Conflicts between the rich and the poor, workers and employer, government and the people, development and conservation, Hong Kong and the mainland, and between different political camps. Will we be able to build a democratic, fair, and competitive Hong Kong in the critical years ahead? And or will conflicts tear us apart and stop us from moving forward? The answer lies in the hands of the policymakers and those who speak for the people they represent. We believe that the future of Hong Kong depends on whether these people are rational, pragmatic, and tolerant enough to reconcile diverse views, accommodate different aspirations, and balance conflicting interests for the greatest good of Hong Kong, to seek consensus for the sake of Hong Kong's political, economic, and social development. And I trust that based on our past record and results, Dari and DAB are the one that who can reconcile different views, accommodate different aspirations, and balance conflicting interests for the greatest good of Hong Kong. And if I'm re-elected into the Legislative Council, I will try to increase the dialogue among the district councillor, the so-called super district councillor, to facilitate better public policy, because we believe that we have a very strong base, and it is good for Hong Kong that we should have regular and continued dialogues in order to make sure our government focus on the right place. Okay, thank you. I think my time is up. Thank you. I'm looking forward for your question. Thank you.
Okay, perfect timing. Thank you, Star. Next, we have Pamela Pak.
Hello, everybody. My name is Pamela. I claim myself a media person because I work at Radio Hong Kong when I was 6 years old as a child reporter. And then I worked in all the radio and television stations in Hong Kong, and also Channel 9 Community Service Broadcasting in San Francisco. I went to my graduate school and undergrad school in USF, graduate with a summa cum laude, and then a graduate school in San Francisco State in broadcasting. So that's why maybe I would like to say colleagues, if I allow me. I'm very honored to have this chance to talk to our person, because I think this super election is a most unfair election under the civilized world. Somebody call it the immute product between the China liaison office and the Democratic Party, or I always say it's a pseudo-Democrat party or a false Democrat party. You know why? Because this so-called Democrat parties, they have no succession. All these candidates, they are in the seat for over 20 years. Their young generations and successors have never got the chance to take over. And also because this party's performance is so unsatisfactory. And also, this party domination is really, really serious. You know, Mr. Deng Xiaoping promised us Hong Kong 50 years without change. But after 15 years, since China have taken over, Hong Kong has changed a lot. Changed to getting worse and worse, you see. People have no place to live. The poor and the rich go to the extreme, extremely, the richer, the more rich, the poor, they have no place to stay. And also the college graduate, they have to owe the government a big butt of money. This is so unfair. But even though it's so unfair, why I want to join them? This work, I'm the only independent and no party who entered, and I have not enough fund, and I have only one or two assistants with myself against the three big parties, especially, next to me, the lady. I heard that, she's been running this already over a year, because you can see all over her pictures and flags all over Hong Kong, Kowloon, New Territory, all over for over a year. But even up to now, you don't see a flag of me or even a piece of a poster on the street, because it's very difficult to get in this election. Even the civil party, Paul Zimmerman wants to, but he has not enough nomination, because we need to have 15 current district council to nominate. And also it's not only that, I think you really got to have the blessing of the China liaison office to have that. For me, I just like Qin Sui in Chinese means taking a submarine to attack. Anyway, well, why I still want to do that? The reason is I have a wishful thinking that I hope that Hong Kong people are clever and smart enough to distinguish and to jump to a conclusion that, the party is fighting in our electrical, is getting worse and worse, and nothing improved after this 15 years. Everything, you can see the Chinese newspaper, all the fightings and things are. And also, people are getting really, really unsatisfied with the government and also with the members, right?
May I ask you to conclude now?
Yeah, sorry. I will go deeply in into it if you ask me questions later on. Thank you.
Thanks, Pamela. Next, we have Frederick Fung.
Good afternoon. I'm pleased to be invited to here and give some my ideas and visions for why I'm standing for the elections. I think somebody here may know that in 1983, I come back from UK after my university education. My first thing I have to do, after joining a press group, I stand for the first directly elected activities in Hong Kong, which is the Urban Council election, and I'm being elected. And after that, we have Hong Kong turned into a new era. It's the debate or discussion or negotiation between China and UK. See how is Hong Kong things happen after 1997. And at that time, a young boy joining with the Sito Martin, that we're pushing that we should have a democratic society in Hong Kong. And we are pushing that at least in the basic law, we have to write down the spirit and the values of the democracies so that we leave it in, have the principle in the basic law. And of course, how to implement it, we leave it to the society coming. And I think why I'm choosing the standing for the election for a super seat, this is really a high risk decision. I can say that this is because a call of this era. I think everybody knows that for the coming term of legislative election, we have to design what kind of election of the chief executive. It is our right and also our power and our authority to make it democratic. To us, ADPL, a small political party in Hong Kong, and only got one legislative members, I say it's a high-risk decision. Because you can see that the rule of the games in the council is quite harsh for the opposition. The rule of the games this year in the legislative election is almost a fatal for democratic camp. Obviously, the pro-establishment camp deliberately trimmed down the number of seats Democrats can win so that we cannot veto the critical decision on political reform in the coming term of office. We need a minimum of 24 Democrats to return to the legislature to maintain our check and balance. The supersede, admittedly a functional constituency, is a symbolic gesture for voters to express their political vision. It is because 3.2 million of Hong Kong people can vote at a time, which nearly 100%, actually 88% of all the voters can vote. In such a case, if the Democrats can win 3 seats out of 5, which representing that, which is a loud and clear message and noise to the SAR government and also to the Beijing government that Hong Kong people want democracies. Hong Kong people want a universal suffrage of election of our CE. This is what I call it's a call. Even though we are small, but we start our democratic role since 1980s. We can't get away from it. It is our duty, it is our right. We have to make it. But I should say, it is quite a painful dilemma to ADPL. The reason is that the competition for our super seat will really easily to be lose. As we cannot have so much money to stand for an election for our whole territories. We don't have so many what we call helpers in different districts. We don't have so much money to buy a big, very big, I think I can see stars, one very big billboard, double size of mine. So it's difficult to make a win situation by having a big propaganda of the election. We may lose. As ADPL, we only got one legislative seat. If we lose, it means we diminish. You never can fund ADP again. But we still take up this task, as it is our minimum effort as a Hong Kong people, as a Chinese, as Hong Kong as a showcase for China. We have to use up all our efforts, all our money, all our manpower to help and to make it. So you can see why we change our strategies from 1+3 to 1+1. We just hope the other two constituencies can have more people support from ADPO to support the other Democrats.
Okay,
we hope 24.
Thanks,
thank you.
Freddie. James Toh.
Yes, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. May I first apologize for my quite casual appearance, because we are, you know, have to work a very long day, or we become a street campaigner day and night. A bit of an introduction of myself. I'm now 49, and I'm a lawyer by profession, and I was elected first into the LegCo in 1991 at the age of 28. Well, then the youngest members in Hong Kong. Together with Martin Lee and Sito Wah, my senior, we created the Democratic Party. At that time, we called the United Democrats of Hong Kong. Maybe I start with a little story of campaign fund donation. One citizen wished to donate $5,000 to my campaign. I remind him that any donation over 1,000 Hong Kong dollar, your name has to be disclosed. Okay, but it may be a fair game. When this gentleman hear this rule, he said, then I will not make any donation, because this gentleman have a lot of Chinese China business. Well, if a ordinary businessman in a campaign, a huge campaign, well, our budget is about $4 million. If this gentleman wished to make a very small donation of $5,000, have that kind of fear in Hong Kong to have serious repercussion, serious consequence of his doing, having some relationship with the Democratic Party or James Toh. I think it's horrible. It is exactly what we have to defend, the so-called core value of Hong Kong. We want to uphold the rule of law. We want to have a fair play in business competition. We'll respect freedom. We will make sure the government respect freedom of speech. We will not allow the government to brainwash our children. Otherwise, the next generation, our core value will be lost. We don't want Hong Kong to be just one of the mainland cities. We want Hong Kong to be a unique position promised by the Chinese government to have one country, two system. A genuine high autonomy to be ruled by Hong Kong people. Of course, for defense and foreign affairs, we will respect the Central People's Government. But please, the Central People's Government must adhere to their promise, because it is an international, solemn international agreement registered with the United Nations that they have promised to us, not just Hong Kong people, but to the world, including you all guy, to let Hong Kong to be have real autonomy, high degree autonomy. But now, the situation is, we said what we call the Western ruling Hong Kong. What I mean by Western? It's not the Western District people, but the Central People's Liaison Office, They intervene into every minute detail, not just in this big election or in the past. Even in the very mild division of vote in Legco. Well, for example, when several months ago, we have to decide whether we form a committee with the special power to summon CY Leung to account for the West Kowloon competition details. The Western, the Central Liaison Office, asked several the pro-establishment camp legislator. They asked them to see them, and not just persuade, but use very high hand to force them to vote against the motion. Maybe I will answer question to make more detail about the Democratic Party's ideals and vision. Thank you.
So let's start our highly anticipated Q&A session. Maybe I should just get the ball rolling by asking our candidates a question very relevant to the super district council functional constituency seats that they are all running for. I would like each of you to take turns to answer this question, perhaps. And do you think that, you know, since you are running for running in a category created to address a lot of criticisms against functional constituencies, do you think that functional constituencies should all be abolished by 2020? So should we start with you, Starry?
Yes, as I've mentioned, we are all looking for the universal suffrage of chief executive and legislative council. The functional constituency is a controversial issue. I think the way and its formation should be reformed in order to fit the rules of the universal suffrage. But how? I can think of two possible ways. One is the total abolition of functional constituency. The second way is to modify the current election method and the way and all these other things so that the Legislative Council functional constituency can become universal suffrage in that sense. I would say it is an important issue. Therefore, as I've mentioned in the opening remark, I think we have to engage general public to discuss.
Hello. Yeah. In terms of functional group, I think in a way is quite good because they are professional in certain area. But the thing that the voter space is too small, some of them only a few hundred. If he can enlarge to all the voters or a big amount of the areas, I think it could be negotiable, but it has to be very thoroughly considered because, you know, nowadays the very unhealthy things come in the Legco is because the Democrat Party, they think they need 24 seats. Actually, I know they don't need. Because if they want to go to have a secret liaison to the China liaison office, they have 8 person, the Democrat Party, and then they change, then they create this mutant, means a super seat. This super seat is, you know, another kind of functional. Why? Because it's belong to the district council. The gentleman is laughing very loudly. Maybe my English and expression is not good enough. But I really want to try to explain with my poor English. universal suffrage is our ideal goal. But for a lot of professionals, they can be considered
as a functional, but the base has to be a whole bundle of it, namely maybe at least half of the generation in Hong Kong.
Oh, thank you.
The population in Hong Kong. Yeah.
Frederick?
I can't agree the last part of the statement of Starry. He said we can modify the present functional consensus. It's wrong. It's not direct election. It's not a true democracy.
And this is also not a direct election.
This is my time, sorry. To be a vote for a true democracy, you have two things. One is the number, quantity. Another is the quality. Starry only said telling us the quantity. She didn't tell us the quantity, the quality. The quality, what's quality of democracies? That we have to have equal value, equal power to be a voter. We have the right to stand for the election, to vote for the election and to nominate the candidates. If it is a functional constituencies, we can't stand for that particular constituencies. We can't nominate for that particular constituencies. So it's not democracies. Please, don't cheating us. What I mean, in 2020, we have to, all seats of LegCo have to be directly elected, no restriction for voters to vote, to stand, and to nominate. Thank you.
Thank you. James?
Yes, the DP fight for democracy for 20-odd years. Maybe I should explain a bit why the mainstream of the Democratic Party would propose such a strange package. Well, you know, the DP vetoed the proposed political reform package in 2007. And so there's no change of the 2008 election in compare with the 2004. And then there is a National People's Congress resolution saying that you should not change the proportion between the direct election and the functional ones. It must be half and half. So we want to increase the democracy. So our thinkers think of a system to try to extend these voters' numbers. So now, next week, in September 9th, 3 million people will vote for in this so-called supersede constituents, composed of 5 seats. This is not good enough, but we think it's a step forward. We would fight for the true one-person, one-vote, equal value, equal vote democracy, true universal suffrage in 2017, 2012. The current 2012 package is a midway. Of course, there's some controversy. And to be honest, I am one of the minority in my party. I'm one of the 20% with Martin Lee. But anyway, the system is there. And we know that the pro-establishment camp fill the candidates with very big names, including Starry. So we know that this is a very big election. Super seats represent the battle or choice of core values. So I would say to join this election. But I would promise you that I will try my very best to abolish this midway package and to go ahead for the true universal suffrage in 2017 and 2012.
Okay, I'll allow Starry to make a very quick response to James.
Well, I think I have to respond to Frederick's claim. I think I'm not treating people, honestly, right? I think we should not rule out any possibility. We have to achieve universal suffrage for Legislative Council. That is our goal, right? I respect people's view that is abolition of functional constituency is the best way. Actually, my personal opinion is toward that side, but I have to be frank to all of you. Even within my party, I cannot get a consensus. How can we get a consensus within our community, right? Based on a lot of survey and poll, we do know that societies are divided in views towards functional constituency. Therefore, I would like to call for all people to engage in early discussion. how we achieve universal suffrage of legislative council is the best way to handle that okay. issue.
Right, thank you. Okay, I saw Paul Zimmerman raising his hand. Can he have the mic, please?
Yeah, I have a question from James Toe. James, you say you're going to be very serious about this. So are you going to resign and call for a referendum in 2015 if the system isn't there? If you don't get the right system, are you going to resign and use your super seat to get a territorial-wide referendum of 3.2 million people who can let the government know whether they support the political reform package put on the table by that time?
To answer straight, I have not decided. But it's one of the possibilities.
Keith Bradshaw, New York Times. Starting with James Toe and maybe also Pamela Peck, what do you think should be done on the national education question in response to the students who are on hunger strike? Should there be any national education? Should they be putting on hold? Is it enough just to name a committee and try to defer this? Thank you.
Pamela, would you like to answer first?
Yeah, I think that to love your country or not, or love somebody or not, is a free choice. So we shouldn't have any forced education to the youngsters. This is not fair to them, especially in the Western civilized world. We have all the civic. Civil education, history, culture, then we don't need that. So that's why, and also I don't agree with Starry that we have to trust the teacher because we can try 3 years. I give her example. If taking drugs is no good, we know it's no good, or if going to the whole house is no good. Can you let your daughter or your relatives, your friends, to try the drug or to try to go to, you know, work for so and so? You know, I don't want to repeat. So I don't think we need to try. So that's, I'm strongly against that. I also name is the education. 23 is the same like the other 23. We have 500,000 of people per rate.
James?
Yes. Well, I think the government should immediately withdraw the package. Well, even assuming the government have no intention of obeying instruction from Beijing to brainwash our next generation or the next generation, Even assuming that they have a very good intention of promoting a patriotic education for one's country, but with a very silly implementation, I think they should withdraw immediately to create a space for the whole society to create a consensus. Well, you know, it's a big controversy. Tens of million of people march out. 90,000 people march out in a very hot day. Next to me, a couple of 70 years old. They told me that, Honorable James Toe, I've never go to the street. I said, really? How about the June 4th massacre in 1989? No. How about the 2003 anti-national security legislation? I'm not in Hong Kong. But why this time? Oh, because you want to brainwash my grandchildren. I'll fight to the death, to the end with you. I think if people have such, whether genuine or not genuine, reservation, you must respect their fear. And you try your very best to convince them that you are genuine. But of course, up to date, it's my view that the government is not genuine. They really want to brainwash our next generation because the top leaders in Beijing feel that Hong Kong people is not patriotic enough, especially in the election. Still, over half of the voters will vote for the pro-democracy camp candidates.
Frederick, you want to make a quick comment?
Yes. I think our SAO government or Beijing government made a mistake or wrong that in a free will society like Hong Kong, you can't make people patriotic. As I was have a discussion with Paul before, patriotic is not learned. It's not by learning. You can't learn it. You have to earn it. How to get the young generation to love the country, not by teaching, by the feeling, by the emotions, by they themselves willing to do it. It is wrong for our government.
Okay, just very quickly, sorry.
A very quick response to national education. Actually, there's no such thing or issue as forcing any school to start or launch national education this year. We all know that schools are free to choose whether or not to start this September, right? Those schools who choose to start, which I believe is very few, are free to choose. Even the government schools are not forced to do anything. And we have 3-year period, and the government have already set up a committee, and the chairman do express clearly that everything can be discussed. Therefore, this morning in the radio bed check, I urged the student to join the committee. I respect their option to or they use any means to express their view, but please do not rule out joining the committee so that we can come back to table and resolve this issue. And last thing I have to mention, I don't think any education conduct in Hong Kong school can result in brainwashing effect. That's impossible.
Okay, next question.
Hi, Douglas Wong from the FCC. Can I ask the candidates to say what they think the chief executive should do to engage most constructively with the new LegCo next week?
Starry, would you like to start?
Yes, I think after the election, then the chief executive should have a detailed talk between the different party, because in Hong Kong we have a unique political system. We all know that we don't have real ruling party, right? The administration do have power but do not have vote, and the legislative council only have vote but do not have power. How can he set up a bridge? I think the first thing is to have regular dialogue. Of course, the other thing is I think he had to be open-minded enough to appoint people with different view to his administration. I think he's going to appoint the deputy secretary or even other some important committee. I think he should consider to appoint people with a different view. I have to say sorry to all of you, because when I joined this event, I say that I have to go at 2. I'm really sorry about that, because I have next meeting at 2:15. Yes, thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you, Starry. Pamela, would you like to answer about the question
issue?
Of how
about CUY. I think it's, in the future it will be really difficult for him, because in the public, I think people lost confidence in him, and also, you know, all his defects, he even never addressed it, and also his members, all kinds of problems, they try to avoid. How can people believe him? And also the 10 ways of about the housing, we think this is really nothing much can help. So I don't know how he can manage. I am not to say what can be done, because I think it would be really difficult for him. Even if Hong Kong people is really nice, they accept him and they wait for his miracle, but I don't believe in miracle. Sorry.
Frederick?
I think the problem between CY and at least our party is not because whether he had met us or not, or discussing things with us or not. I think what his main value to rule Hong Kong, we need this. Before, Donald did tell us, big market, small government. I think it's wrong. It's not good for today's. But how is this CY? You tell us how you rule, what is your principle? you tell me. I may not agree with you, but we can have chance to debate on it. We have can chance to debate on different policies, especially for those deep-rooted problem policies for Hong Kong, like housing, like shall we develop more economic sectors? Shall we give how to give more chance for our youngsters, younger generations to have more chance to grow up, to build up their social ladders, and so on. But don't just make it as a social gathering. Hi, KK. Hi, KK. No use. That's what I want.
Very quickly, James.
Yes. Very difficult question. I would say all the parties have their platform in the election, their manifesto. So CY well understand that what the higher priorities are of policy proposal or so-called core values are in our platforms. But for example, if you do want to engage not just with the party but with the public, well, you must first maybe withdraw the national education package, create more space for discussion, creating consensus. When you appoint those very extreme leftist person to those very important committees, then you are choosing your own way. You are choosing to exclude even the very more mild person or the middle person, okay, in the political spectrum. Then you are choosing your way to have extremely left policy. If you know that many of the parties want to narrow the gap with the rich and poor and have some kind of policy proposal, at least you should take some of their proposal into your next policy address. If the parties don't want to go become a part of the government, say the Democratic Party, don't want to have the political appointment, then at least we would not refuse to be appointed in some policy consultative committee. Okay, so you can appoint some more people so that you can listen directly in those committees our views. Okay. That's a core engagement.
Right, can we have another question from the floor, please?
May I say a little bit about this super election, if nobody asks the questions, because both of them spend a lot of time. I want the media to really understand why this is the most unfair election, because only the big party and the threshold, and also by sending letters, like they have parties, their candidate can have five times more letters and introductions to their homes. And also, like I said, even civil party, they cannot get in. And also the public, telling about 3 million or some people can vote, but they cannot enter the vote, they cannot participate themselves. Another thing is, this is only an exchange of two big parties to get two more seats on each side. One is the, you know, the government Chinese liaison party. One is, I call them pseudo or a false Democrat big party, because they said they always claim 24 seats, but they have secret discussion and exchange this super seat. Nobody else can participate. Even I have the chance to sneak in, but I don't think, I just want to have the belief that Hong Kong people will understand this so-called Democrat parties, even themselves, three of them, has taken the seat for over 20 years. Their young generations have never been come in, not only that, and also, not only that, even we want to, you know, like in United States, Obama may
have to conclude very soon.
May have to give out the seat if they have no good result. But the last 20 years, they've been performing very, very unsatisfactory.
Okay, thank you, Pamela. Right. I think we will conclude today's very lively session.
Thank you.
Well, we have one gentleman wants to ask one question. Maybe we'll make this the last question.
Yes, my name is Oren Thatcher. Just a very quick question to the, I guess, the everybody that's left, I guess, can be defined as a pro-democracy camp. But I'm just curious because everything that I heard, almost everything I heard, is about what, in terms of positions and attitudes about the system of governance in Hong Kong, given national education arguably is about that. I'm a bit disappointed that not much was said about the real issues, or many sort of real issues that affect Hong Kong, like, you know, needless to say, housing, economy, and so on, the gap between rich and poor. I mean, I really wish the debate could go beyond. Let's say, maybe to pose it as a question, let's say there was full democracy in Hong Kong, universal suffrage, we're over that, okay? What are your positions on some of those core issues? I mean, I don't mean to, you know, invite lengthy campaign speeches now, but I'm curious to know, maybe you can say, when will we be at a point where we can start talking about the issues as opposed to about the system?
Okay, how about we ask each candidate to spend 2 minutes to talk about like your number one priority, outside of the issues that we've discussed already.
Okay. Yes. I mean, to me, it's housing or the property market. I think the market is unfair. It's a dead market now. It's controlled by a few big companies. So what you think that the government have to do two things. First, some people can't rent and buy the units in the market. It has to be built by the government, say the public housing and the HOS. On the other hand, for the markets, I think it's the only government that have the power and authority to reframe it, make the market active, and make the market have competitions. That's what I think, not only a betterment for Hong Kong people, but also a betterment for people who are doing business in Hong Kong. So for these days, I think you are small and middle companies, you pay all your money to the rent.
James?
You have to be changed.
Yes, housing. Housing is the number one issue. Well, even in CY's platform and manifesto, he would have several tens of his articles written to the contribute to the debate and contribute to the newspaper before he was elected. Well, he would admit that in the last 15 years, the housing situation of Hong Kong people is deteriorating. You heard about these subdivided small flats. I can tell you that even professionals, young professionals, have to live in these subdivided small flats. Of course, they are not renting $1,000 or $2,000. They are paying about $4,000 with the in-house internet. Okay, a small window, very small window overlooking the harbor. Okay, this we call the luxurious subdivided flats, but they cannot afford. But suppose if a young university graduate, couples with 5 years to 10 years experience cannot afford to accumulate enough money for the first deposit and to plan for the long-term family creation,
hey,
the
James,
kids,
I think
next generation, then, sorry, I think it's a hopeless society. So housing is very important.
Please. Okay.
I one
think
thing you want
both these two parties have been said this for really, really long, and their long service in the government has been proven they are failure. But I just one or two single very simple issue is about the housing and the travel. Because like the government, he can give the team area not to as his governor's palace, and also the north part of government places. They should distribute to the 18 or 19 districts. So this can save a lot of money for the government. They can rent it to the big business or the international business. And also the government staff can work in their own area. They save a lot of transportation and money. And then in the 1918 areas, if they don't have to take a long busing and save a lot of money and save, and ecology-wise, it's very good. And there's a lot of land the government should give out, not only for the very expensive auction.
Okay.
Another thing is education, like very simple. Like I went to a junior college in City College of San Francisco. I didn't have to pay a penny for that. And also the government allow me some job to do when I study. So I think the Hong Kong government and even the electrical members, they can deal with big companies like Cathay Pacific and Maxim Restaurants. They can train somebody and also get paid. I think that's a good way to learn from the Western countries.
Thank you.
Thank
Pamela and our other two speakers. I know that there are lots more you want to ask the candidates, but we'll have to wind up for today. Thank you again for attending.
Thank you for your patience.
Panel.
Thank you.
And remember to vote.